So, yeah, there was a topic. So there wasn't a video this week. We were going to scramble to cut a video together over the weekend, and then we thought, let's just talk. And what I want to talk about. So I know some of you were with me over the weekend. We did our client intensive, an amazing client intensive with just a wonderful woman from South Africa, who I still think the coolest thing about her, like biography wise, was she kind of created the constitution of South Africa. I think that's kind of cool. But in all other ways, she was a complete underachiever. But she was amazing. And the way this particular conversation went is she presented a number of pretty meaty life areas and challenges. So she's working on a second book, and it's a book that she wants to have a notable impact on mental health in South Africa. And she's got a foundation that she's the chairman of. She's in charge of a family foundation, and she's been struggling with running that. And it came out along the way that she's been dealing with suicidal ideation since her adult son committed suicide. And the list went on. There were about seven or eight things, any one of which you would think, wow, that's proper. But as we went, what was just very clear to me listening is that we didn't need to deal with any of them individually necessarily. That they were all boats sitting on the water, and that all boats rise with the tide. So you can try and deal with each thing differently. I called them therapy bait. Each of the subjects, it was like, oh, it's a therapist's wet dream. And then there was one about money that was a coach's wet dream. That was coach bait. It's like, ooh, let's get into that. Yeah. But it's being seduced by the form. It's being caught up in the output. It's not liking what you're seeing up on the screen and trying to fix it up on the screen. Like, we know we can't change the outcome of a movie that we're watching. We get that mostly. There have been a couple of movie theaters I've gone to where people in the audience seem to think they could change if they shouted loud enough, "Don't go down there," that somehow the heroine would suddenly realize that going into a dark room when there's somebody telling you they're going to kill you on the phone is a bad idea. I don't know. But we don't see that that's true in life too. That we can't change the movie up on the screen and expect it to be a meaningful change. If I walk into an apple orchard and it's looking a bit, not many apples are growing. There's a bunch of rotten apples on the ground, and I go in like, and they do for a photo shoot and glue apples, beautiful apples, to one of the trees, and it looks amazing. I haven't created a thriving orchard. My son's girlfriend is an art director for photo shoots for Restoration Hardware and sort of high-end stores, catalog shoots. And she was showing me that they, since they film things 6 months ahead, they were filming the spring shoot last week. Now, Portland, where they're based, is incredibly rainy. And in order to make it look like spring and make the sidewalks look pristine, they literally, she showed me, she had a flamethrower. There was somebody with a flamethrower drying off the concrete to make it look like it was dry in spring, right? That's what we do when we try to fix the form directly, when we try to fix even our thinking directly. It's too late. Yes, you can make it look better, but you haven't really changed anything. It 3 hours after they finished shooting, it was wet again. 2 days after you've taped your apples to the orchard, most of them will have fallen to the ground and no new ones are going to grow. So what is it that these boats float on? What is it that if it goes up, all things get better? And that's sort of just, you know, what I wanted to launch as our starter. So I'm going to put you into groups just for, we'll take 7 minutes. Cause that's a completely random number. And let's get you down. So there'll be about three of you in a room. If you can't go in, just don't go in. There'll be enough people. And I just want you to, with each other, what's the thing that changes everything? Like if you accept it as a premise, hey, the way I'm going to help my client with anything is the way that's going to help them with everything. What is the thing that raises the level? Where do you focus? And I want you guys to talk about it. There's not a right answer, but I want you to explore it a little with each other and then we'll explore it together. So you should get an invitation for a breakout room and I will bring you back in about 7 minutes. And they're coming back in. Hey, so what occurred? Like raise a little digital hand if you've got something that you can share about what came to mind that felt like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like that might be at least a part of this universal tide that raises old boats. Yeah, Minor, how about you?
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
I'm good. Minor or Minor, or how do you say your name?
Minor, that's minor. Fine, yeah.
Okay, great.
Thank you. Well, we were just talking in the group, and I think the bottom line of our conversation was, fuck it, based on an example that one of our peers shared. To me, it's kind of, you know, that point where when you decide to look at things in a different way and you just, you know, whatever you have in your thinking, you just let it go. And so, well, fuck it, you know, and I'm going to try to reach out to this guy, or you can be completely up into your head and not doing it, or just fuck it and do it.
Okay, and so it's sort of like getting to fuck it helps everything.
It looks like, right? So it's, to me, okay. it's like sure. looking at things in a different way so you can just let it go.
No, I like it very much. And I'm going to be doing this with each thing is just not, is suggesting. So have a think about what has to be, how does the world have to look for saying fuck it to things that other people think are very important, doesn't feel irresponsible, feels natural, right? Because strategically we can say fuck it at any point, but what would make it fuck it the natural, like the normal, the obvious point of view? Do you understand the difference? It's like if I think this is the only remaining life force, and when this can is gone, I die. And you say, just say fuck it. I'm going to say fuck you, right? Because this is the life elixir. But if I see that this, there's an infinite supply of this, I will never run out. And you say, you know what? You're holding that too tight. Just say fuck it. I'll go, yeah, okay. There's more where that came from. So again, we're just looking at what does the world need to look like for those great behavioral ideas to actually be natural and obvious instead of something I have to practice. So thank you.
Is it kind of opening up to the possibility of being more of everything out there? Like, you know, it's not just my thinking, it's not what I believe is true. So just opening up to the possibility of there's more.
Well, so that, if I open up to the possibility, even that there's more to the world than I see, there's more to the world than I know. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy from Hamlet, right? That's going to change everything. Now, in some situations, that might also get me to say, fuck it. But everything's going to get a little bit looser. I'm going to be able to hold it a little bit more lightly if I can see that. And that's where we're looking. Where we're looking together is how... like how far upstream can we make the change where the behavioral stuff is automatic, is natural, doesn't have to be practiced, is just Well, of course I'm going to behave this way because this is now what I see. Michael Imus.
Ooh, you said my last name, sir.
Well, it's because I thought there were multiple Michael.
So for me, Michael, it's seeing them. And maybe, I'm not sure about this, maybe even before that, seeing myself, recognizing who I am, to be able to see them. Because it seems to me that that's where, like, when they really notice, like, how fucking cool they are and how wonderful and all the things that's so apparent, like, from the outside, from me, like, and they really don't see, they don't see that. They don't get that. If I see them, I'm going to be acting in a way, speaking in a way to that in them that they might wonder, even without me trying to convince them, or like, especially if I don't. Oh, what's going on? This is different. This feels different. And then thinking about that, it's like the first time I kind of saw the principles and learning about the principles and like a different progression that I learned, like that I got introduced to them. Like, you know, I was thinking about thought for so long and then I got into this conversation and then there was this mind, I didn't get it. But from the other way around, it's like, if I am love and beauty and wonder and awesomeness, what the fuck is going on when I don't feel like it? What the fuck is going on when everything seems shit? So for me, that progression makes sense. Okay, so there's this thing, it's called, there's this power, it's called thought. And it can represent anything. And there's this power called consciousness, and it can make all of that, that thought represents, it can come alive for me in this moment. And then the interplay from that, that has so many implications and like gentleness and love and kindness and freedom and all of that kind of comes from that space.
Yeah.
So this is my answer.
Yeah. And so again, if we go, okay, so the activity might be seeing their amazingness, mm-hmm. but for them, it's almost recognizing like, oh, there's a way this already works. In other words, I already am made for life. I don't have to. Yes, there may be skills for me to learn, but there's nothing missing. And suddenly it's a different game. If I'm looking at problems and struggling, going, what's wrong with me that I am struggling with that? That's a completely different conversation than if I genuinely see, oh no, I got everything I need.
Right.
How do we get where we want to go out here? So yeah. Very cool.
Yeah.
Thank you. Pauline.
Hey, Michael.
Hello.
There was four of us in our group. And what I really loved was how what each of us shared was both our own grounding. And I could hear, like, yes, that's true. That's true. That's true. Directionally, it was all in the same direction. And what I love is like, oh, there's a lot of vocabulary we can put to it. So there's no like one right way of helping a client or seeing, but that directionally we are looking to, I guess if I wanted to summarize it up, it was looking at just what's true for everybody versus what's made up of thought or beliefs. And the other one, which came out in different ways, like, you know, I've shared with you that I really heard you when you said, all babies are born worthy. Like that. And another one of the participants said, like, we all have this inner GPS in us. Or it was helping the client see, wake up to the fact they're fucking awesome. yeah, what I loved, it was just directionally all in the same. And so we can play with our words. And so it's not in the words, it's the direction that we're pointing clients to based on our own grounding.
Yeah, there's something that seems to happen when we hear truth. And it makes a difference. And we recognize it. It's like, oh yeah. We know it's that's the thing about truth, is it's just kind of like it's almost anticlimactic. Usually it's like, oh, is that all that was happening? I thought it was an earthquake. It was just a train going by. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What I thought would have been cool is like, you know, after experience that in our room, I was thinking, oh, it would have been cool to be in all the other rooms and just see how everybody else expresses it. And so we get to see just how much range we have to play with.
Yeah. And that's kind of what we're doing here. So we're trying to bring the rooms together a little. Thank you. Let's go to Ofri.
Hi, Michael.
Hello, hello.
And everyone. It's funny. I don't know if I have a lot to add to what was said. But I will take that last one based on truth, because that's what came to me as well. And I guess in my present world, the people around me are not so much looking for to achieve things or feel that they're missing things. It's more of how do I remove this baggage from myself and my heart? And I guess the truth, that thing about truth and the fact that the only thing that is really here is this present moment, and the connection to self is basically the only thing that we can really control. And if we allow that, and if we enable that, then we can see, we have the potential to see things in a different light. And I guess I said in the group as well, the only thing that I said in the group, there's a lot of post-trauma and things that people are feeling in their bodies right now, and they don't see thought, they don't see truth, they don't see anything. And for some reason, the only thing that I find is reliable in a sense is the spirit that you can rely on. It's almost hope-worthy, just connecting to that. So that's where I go to these days.
Yeah, there's something. So, and this is for everyone. There's something about why is it that when we hear truth, when we see truth, things get better? Because it almost doesn't seem to matter what the truth is. Like when Pauline was saying, everybody had all these really cool things that they've seen. There's just something about seeing. And to my mind, this begins to point to what that invisible rising tide is, that it's where we have to go in order to see truth. Like, what is the place in us from which we can see truth? And it seems to be a different dimension than the place from which we see the form. And it all looks solid and real. And again, this is an exploration. This is a direction we're looking at. Thank you, Ofri. Francisca. Oh, you're muted. There you go.
Yeah. Hi, Michael. Well, a lot has been said already, but I would always say it's the it really changes everything when we can point to the building blocks that their experience is really made of, because then when they really see that, then they see how they use those building blocks in relationships, and then they see how, you know, how they use it in their business or whatever. And it just and then automatically the thoughts that they had around this, what looked solid for them, this little castle that they built that looked solid, but then suddenly they see, oh, this is just this thought that seemed real to me, then there's nothing to do on the behavioral level anymore, because it will just not make sense to do the same thing anymore as it did before. And one thing that I think I would add is that pointing to, well, always pointing to the fluidity as well, not just how the experience is being created in the moment, but the fluidity and how in that respect, it's actually not that relevant what it's like in the moment. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily phrase it like this if someone comes and, you know, is hurting or is worried, but it's just when they get a feel of, okay, yes, this is my experience now, and these are the building blocks it's made of, but this is nothing solid. It will change, and it can change any minute. Then it's not that relevant that I'm sad now. And in terms of what you said about the truth, how come that there's this feel to it? I think it's some kind of recognition of home, of where we came from at some point. I mean, don't know if that makes sense, but that was what came to mind for me.
There's an element, that place that we go to when we see truth, that allows us to see truth, is closer to home.
Yeah.
It's more ourselves. And from that place, everything looks different. So we're no longer at the bottom looking up. We're kind of above it looking down. We can see it unfolding instead of being caught up in the unfolding. So it's a shift in a level. It's a shift to higher ground that seems to move the needle. Katie.
Yeah. Hi. Okay. Okay. At the risk of being a bit of a brat, I just want to ask, like, I've been thinking a lot lately about how I show up with people who I think have an understanding versus people who I think don't have an understanding. And it can feel really unsafe to have a conversation with somebody about deeper grounding when they're like really in the felt reality of their situation or their circumstance. And I've been noticing this come up because I've been, you know, I have coaching conversations with other coaches, which I feel like I just jump into knowing that we share an understanding. But then there's people that I come in with a lot of thinking about them. Like I don't know where their understanding is. And I guess something that's sort of occurring to me is that that doesn't have to change my grounding. Like what might come out of my mouth could be completely different if there's a sense that maybe we're not starting on the same footing. But it's something that I'm almost embarrassed to ask. It's like, I feel like I should know the answer, but like, what can you speak to around, you know, when you're talking to somebody that's really in the feeling, like it can feel very, and I don't like the word unsafe, but it's what's coming up. Like just can feel very unsafe to try to pop certain bubbles for people. And then it's like, there, I've popped your bubble, like goodbye. And you know, and then what do we do about that? Does that make any sense?
Well, it does make a lot of sense. And I'm going to kind of go around the houses a little bit and just speaking to different bits of it. I'm not sure that it's our job. I don't think of it as my job to pop somebody's bubbles. Like there's nothing worse when you get the packing material with those little bubbles and somebody else pops all the good ones before you. It's kind of annoying. Like I want to be able to pop my own damn bubbles. But if you can show me that there are bubbles and that they pop and that what I think is real and solid is can go just like that, then I'm free to pop them or allow them to pop at my own pace that feels safe to me. So our job is just to show them the ephemeral nature.
Yeah.
It's not to go in there and fuck with it. I mean, it probably should feel unsafe. That sounds really unsafe. Now, having said that, context matters a lot in coaching, in doing work with people. That's why it's really annoying when somebody just comes up to you going, that's just your thinking. It's like, fuck you. But if somebody has come to me and requested my assistance in helping them have a more wonderful life, and I can see that showing them that what they're experiencing right now is not reality in total. It is a thought-created reality of the moment. Well, that's why they've come to me. They might not know that's why it would, but if they do struggle with it, if they are, well, why are you saying that? It's the context of the conversation that allows for the disruption. And it's the safety they feel with me. So that's why I always talk about loving disruption. It is disruptive. This conversation is disruptive if you're doing it right, because you are essentially saying, hey, everything you think of as reality, like that's disruptive. But if they know that it can unfold at a pace that is comfortable for them, you're not going to go in there and break it. If they have genuinely come to you for assistance, so that when they're uncomfortable, you can say, hey, we can stop anytime, but this is what you asked for. As a gen, not like you asked for it. No, like, do you want to keep going? I have found that 99 times out of 100 people say yes. Thank you. I just needed to catch my breath. What are you hearing in that?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because that's what I do with people. But I think it's just this thought when they blurt out all this crazy stuff they have going on. And I'm like, couldn't I just tell them that they made it up, it's not real, and then we could just save an hour and a half? Like, I think
it's, you know,
like
what?
But a horror fantasy at the back of my mind.
Look, you will sense occasionally, yes.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you can just say to somebody, you know, that's all made up, and they'll hear you.
Yeah.
But in a way, it doesn't matter what you say. It matters what is heard. And that's why it's kind of the space inside which the conversation is unfolding that impacts how the conversation goes. Let me speak to it in terms of what I'm seeing. One of the reasons I wanted to bring this up thematically is because, you know, I'm seeing more and fresh. And I think I'm really good at having this conversation. I'm really good at facilitating the rising tide. I don't think I'm as good at helping other people help other people to do it yet. And I've been doing this for decades, right? So you'd hope I'd be better by now. Sorry. But I'm trying. And here's my latest iteration. Here's what I'm saying. It seems to me that what changes in somebody, what we call transformation, there's a couple of different ways that it looks to me. One is somebody comes back to themselves. They come back to themselves, their true self, their deeper self, their soul level self. And it's familiar, even if you haven't been there for a while. It always feels like, oh, I mean, that's why we use the metaphor of home, because for most people, that's what it feels like. They've come home. Oh, I'm home. I can rest now. So there's kind of an awakening to a deeper dimension of self. That's one way it looks to me. Another way it looks to me is just going to higher ground, literally going up levels of consciousness. Sid would talk about infinite levels of consciousness. I actually wanted to read in Enlightened Gardener Revisited. It's about a three-minute excerpt. So this is, if you've never read one of these books, it's a wisdom fiction. So there are characters, and there are all these therapists, and they stumble across an enlightened gardener, and sort of learn about how the mind works from him. And the gardener's name is Andy. Once again, Janet had been quietly listening to me and Andy, but now she broke in with a question. Andy, could you clarify what you mean by universal consciousness? Andy shook his head. Janet, no one can ever explain intellectually what universal consciousness really is. Yet as thinking human beings, we use this magnificent gift every day of our lives. It's a gift that enables us to experience the existence of creation. I guess you could say, it just is. Andy, I'm sorry if I seem to keep asking the same question again and again, Janet apologized, but it's really important to me to better understand the principles. Why do you differentiate between universal consciousness and personal consciousness? The gardener thought for a considerable time, then answered, "My dear, universal consciousness has no form of its own and can only be talked about metaphorically. Let me try to explain it this way. Universal consciousness is a gift we use to travel through this life. It allows us to see creation. It's a psychological gift that comes from before time, space, or matter. As far as you are concerned, this world would not exist without it. Personal consciousness is a gift that we use from moment to moment to see and react to the world we live in." So there's something in there, I'm going to carry on, but there's something in there about the formless. And I kind of think that's the tide, the spiritual dimension, literal spiritual, like spirit as opposed to material, the not formed, the non-existent, the pure potential, the indestructible because it has no form. So there's nothing to destruct. That space seems to be the tide that rises. I found Andy's answer very interesting, but what really held my attention was the assurance with which he spoke, the confidence in his voice, as though what he had just said was a straightforward and simple fact. Looking very serious, Janet remarked, "So what I hear you saying, Andy, is that this knowledge or understanding we are looking for is found in a zone beyond time, space, and matter?" Now again, that's formless. That's before we form time, space, and matter. "Yes," Andy said, "that is what I'm saying." "Well, I have to say," Janet said, "what you're saying is amazing to me, but I'm afraid I don't get this talk about time, space, and matter. Do you think you could elaborate a little bit more on the idea of something beyond time, space, and matter?" There was a moment of quiet while Andy looked down at his hands. "I'm afraid not. How could anyone elaborate on something that is before form? What you have to realize, Janet, is that the wisdom of the sages was beyond explanation with mere words and had to be spoken of metaphorically. This is where many get mixed up in their thinking. They often take the metaphor as literal truth, and most definitely this will only lead away from what is sought." "Perhaps that's true," I said, joining in. "But the big question is, how do we access this knowledge?" Andy gazed at me intently and said, "When your mind is still enough and goes into the state of no personal thought, the incubation takes place and the wisdom you seek will be brought to life." I'm going to read that last bit of back again because it's kind of the key to the kingdom here. "When your mind is still enough and goes into the state of no personal thought, the incubation takes place, and the wisdom you seek will be brought to life." And that's what I see happen in a transformative conversation. There's a moment where the person touches, and usually we touch together, a deeper dimension. It gets quiet inside. Sometimes in a room, you can feel it like a drop. Sometimes it just feels like, ah. And in that moment, if you don't rush away from it, if you don't rush to fill the space, new and fresh starts to emerge. It's a healing space. It's a whole space. It's an impersonal space. It's a universal space. So we go from the personal to the impersonal to the universal. We go from the form to thought to pure formlessness, pure thought, pure consciousness, pure mind. And something happens in that space, something awakened, something comes to life, and everything looks different. It's like a reset. It's like shaking up the Etch-a-Sketch so that you can start again. And it doesn't matter if you've had the same damn picture on your Etch-a-Sketch for 15 years since you were a kid, you shake it once and you get a fresh start. And so it seems to me that the tide that rises is our level, our client's level of consciousness. It is our awareness of awareness, our consciousness of consciousness that moves the needle. And as Sid would always say, the two things that will raise consciousness, will raise our level, are hearing truth. And in order to hear truth, it's helpful if somebody's speaking truth. And often in a conversation like this, that's us. At least pointing to truth. And to rest in beautiful feelings. And that quiet that happens in a session. That quiet in you that awakens the quiet in them, awakens them to the quiet in themselves. That looking away from the form and the thought forms to the space before thought. That's the space where, that's just a space that feels beautiful. And we rest in that state of no thought and something happens. Something comes to life. And again, another way of saying it is what comes to life is them. And then that's why that phrase, nothing's changed in the world yet, but everything's different. And because everything's different, things in the world start to change. So would just love to hear from a few of you. What is that spark in you? What comes to mind? Yeah, Ellen.
Last week, I had a small group, and I've not been teaching in groups for a long time. And I draw this triangle you use.
Yeah.
So the universal consciousness on top, and then the line to me, that as a coach, I could point them in a direction. Mm-hmm. But they, I used a sun, mm-hmm. the top of the triangle, and I said, you're a beam of the sun yourself. You're part of that. And exactly what you said, that quietness came in the room. Mm. And I hardly had to do anything. It just happened for them. And the energy dropped and it was so quiet. And it happened for them because they find their own sunbeam. They find their own. And that is always what needed. And I was surprised by their wisdom. I allowed myself to be surprised by what they could see for themselves. And that was beautiful.
Yeah.
That was even better than I could express.
And the reason that it's better is because it's theirs. It's on their side. So there's no resistance to it because they're seeing it.
Yeah.
Whereas even our best wisdom usually has to pass through some filters.
Yeah.
So as I'm listening to you, you know, way of describing that, is our job is to take them to that place, to show them that world. You know, Sid would always remind the psychologists, you know, remember, it's a spiritual conversation. Because when you go to that dimension, to the formless, to that space before form, to what's just true.
Yeah.
It just, they've got it from there.
Yeah.
And over time, you can help them get more familiar with that space, more comfortable in that space, more used to living from that space. Yeah.
Beautiful.
Nice. Thank you. Minor.
Yeah. What came to mind, Michael, I remember once, or I heard you speaking about somebody saying that instead of coaching, he reigns.
Yeah. It's Anthony DeMello. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And that's what came to my mind, right? It's I love that metaphor of I just rain. Because
yeah.
Just by shading what I see, what looks right to me, what I've seen is that people get something out of it, although and most of the time they don't get what I thought they would get. They just get something, right? Or at least the ground is wet with the rain. Then maybe later on something will grow. So it's about making that pause so we can allow to hear, we can allow ourselves to hear something else. That, I don't know, that space, that inner state, or yeah, that space that creates, help us create our reality. So I don't know, just by raining, I love that metaphor. That's what comes to my mind. Just yeah. By raining, it's allowing them and even ourselves to get something different.
And I think it's allowing for a level of simplicity that most of us as coaches think, but if that's all I'm doing, how do I charge for that? Like, I actually think that's the obstacle for most coaches I talk to, because we do see it. Most of us have had that experience of how quickly somebody can change. Sid would say, if you want to help somebody, you can try to help them. But if you really want to help them, show them a new world and get out of the way. And so taking them to this space, showing them this space, guiding them into the state of no thought, the space before thought, before time, space, and matter, the formlessness at the heart of the form. That's really the gig. And then it's really nice for people as their world starts to shift and change, because it does. You know, over this weekend, those of you who were there, you could see that we went to this space on day one. And then day by day, in every break, new bits of her world started to change. It's really nice to have somebody there with you to hold your hand and say, it's okay. It's okay that your world is falling apart, because that's not the real world. And the real world is so much richer and more beautiful than this world that looks like it's falling apart around you. And you are so much more amazing, like Michael was pointing to, than the you that no longer feels quite as real as it did. So in a way, the way I see our job is we guide people to this deeper dimension of self, this formless dimension of life, this spiritual place, this space, heaven. Right? That's Sid would talk about it that way all the time. Heaven's not a place, it's a space. The kingdom of heaven is within you, some other famous guy said. Right? That when you go to that place, that space, when you guide them to that space, and then stand back, like get out of the way, but don't leave them there. Right? Like, you know, the thing about teaching kids to swim by throwing them in ponds, it's very uncool now, but it's a time-honored tradition. What is not cool is throwing them in the pond and leaving. Right? That's irresponsible parenting, people. But if you're there, so that if they're floundering, A, they know you're there. And if they really do need your help, you're right there to help them. But you're giving them the space to explore the space. You're diving in with them and playing in the water with them and enjoying the rising tide with them. And as your level goes up, as your grounding gets more and more solid, it's easier and easier to do, but it's an art. The art is, because not everybody will just follow you, right? If it was that easy, maybe there wouldn't be a job description. Like, if all you had to do is say, oh, just go to the formless. Oh, okay, thanks. Right? Then maybe we wouldn't have a job. But fortunately for us, nobody seems to be that good at doing that. Right? So it is actually incredibly helpful to have a guide, to have somebody along who knows where we're going, who can guide us home, and then who can be with us to kind of answer questions and enjoy it with us as we go on our own personal voyage of discovery as clients, our own personal expansion as clients, our own looking back out at our lives and going, what was I thinking? What you were thinking was the reality you were living in. But you can think again. You can change your mind. But you can kind of only change your mind from this space. You can't really change your mind from inside the movie. So you got to step out of the movie. So thank you. I hope over time this expands and we can pick up on it. Our next time together will be a business building call. I do not know when, and Lynn's not here to ask, so I won't make it up, but it'll be in your calendar and you'll get a reminder. And I will look forward to seeing you all then. Thank you, everybody. I'd unmute you, but I don't know how. But if you want to unmute yourself, please do. Bye.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you very
Bye.
Much.
Mm-hmm.